Welcome in to the newest edition of the Just In Time Sports Podcast. I am your owner and host, Justin Jackson. And this week's episode, we'll be discussing the NFL as it heads to the divisional round. We will have our NFL betting segment, Jack's Pack. We will be discussing the NBA. And of course, we will have our best for last. Now, as always, don't forget to like, rate, and subscribe to the Just In Time Sports Podcast, wherever you get your podcasts, including the YouTube show, JTS After Dark. And as always, don't forget to follow and turn on the post notifications for at JTime Sports. I repeat, at JTime Sports for all of your breaking news coverage and updates on all of your favorite social medias. Now, as always, don't forget to sit back and get ready to learn something.
JTS. Yeah. Just In Time Sports.
Life is good. Life is good.
Look. This is Just In Time Sports. Come and get your weekly takes. His opinion from the heart. He can never show you fake. If you winning or you losing, he gon' tell it to you straight. How we talking basketball without a Jordan Brown debate? If you got the hottest takes, you better come and make your case. If you win a couple games, he might even show you grace. JTS on every platform, we growing adaptation. Numbers going off the charts, we create the separation. Louisiana till I die, it's where I'm from, I can't replace it. So people minds are obtuse, but I like to be adjacent. Giving my opinion like I'm Nick Wright or I'm Jason. ESPN better watch out cause I'm coming for the spaceship. We even tweeting on Twitter, you can meet us in the spaces. Highlight clips of sports news, yeah, you gotta embrace it. We never had it easy, we just came from the pavement. I might be controversial, but I like to make my statements. This is Just In Time Sports, come and get your weekly takes. His opinion from the heart, he can never show you fake.
He can never show you fake.
Look, if you winning or you losing, he gon' tell it to you straight.
He gon' tell it to you, he gon' tell it to you, he gon' tell it to you.
This is Just In Time Sports, come and get your weekly takes.
Come and get it.
He gon' tell it to you straight, to you straight.
Welcome into the show, into season 6, episode 2 of the Just In Time Sports Podcast. As you heard in the intro, I am your owner and host, Justin Jackson. Excited to be with you guys today. Very rare I get to do these, which is my Insta release shows. Now during Thanksgiving week and Christmas time, I can get them done because I have more off time, being that I am a high school coach. However, I get a little more off time in those time periods. However, today is a rare day I'm able to do so. And I'll probably do another Insta release show next week. But of course, when you guys know, when you guys get the info on that, you guys, of course, will know when those Insta release shows are happening. However, this is a very exciting show for me. I like shows where I don't have to do a bunch of recap. And I know next week, if I end up doing an audio show early in the week, it'll end up being a mostly recap show because the divisional round would have just happened. Conference championship games would be a week out. The national championship game would have happened. And so there'd be a lot of recap on the show. But that is a show that I do like recap shows. I like telling you guys what I saw. I like hearing you guys from what you guys see as well. But I do like prediction shows. I do like preview shows. I do like seeing what I think's gonna happen, and that's what a lot of this show's about. But before we do that, we do have to recap. And so we do a little bit of wild card recap here. We're not gonna spend too much time on any specific game. If you want to hear that, the YouTube show has it. However, I do want to talk about the fact that a lot of the wild card games were blowouts. It's just pretty rare in the NFL. The NFL, typically, I think the average point spread of a game is something around 4.5, 5 points. No more, like a touchdown. I think it's like the biggest average per win that happens in the NFL over a season, 7.5 points. Considering a big point spread in the NFL is like 6.5. You're like, man, almost a touchdown? Like, that's a big point spread in the NFL. 4, 4.5 is a very common number. 3, 3.5, somewhere in there. And it was this blowout city. The Texans blew out the Chargers. The Commanders and the Bucks was probably the game of the weekend. Well, no, it was the game of the weekend. And to me, a superstar was born. I'm an LSU fan, so I've been supporting Jaden Daniels all the way through his rookie year. Spoiler alert for Jack's Pack. That'll continue. But I've been supporting Jaden Daniels all the way through his rookie year. I've been huge on the Jaden Daniels train. Y'all know I love my LSU guys. If it's Daniels, Burrow, Chase, Malik Nabers, Clyde Edwards-Helaire. I love my LSU guys. So I've been supporting Jaden Daniels all the way through. Again, that's not going to change in Jack's pack. But he had the game of the weekend with Baker. Beautiful, well-executed last drive between him, Cliff Kingsbury, and Dan Quinn. And we're going to talk about the Commanders a little more, obviously, when we get into the divisional round games. But great last drive. You guys have all seen it probably 10, 12 times at this point. It was executed perfectly well, and they walk off the field that doinks in. I mean, it even had drama at the end. The game-winning field goal doinks in. It hits the upright, which is about as wide as a dollar bill. It hits the inside of the upright and goes in for the win. About as close as you can get to an overtime without going to OT in that scenario. The Rams handled on. Oh man, who the Rams beat? I can't. Oh man, beat them out of my memory. The Rams handled the Vikings. Yeah, the Rams handled the Vikings. Just a game where if you're the Vikings, man, you sit and you're 14-4 and you don't make it to the divisional round. And think about this: if you're the Rams, your final record in your season is 14-4, and you didn't win a playoff game. If you're the Vikings, you're sitting at home going, we lost to two teams all season, and we didn't win a wild card game because we lost to the Lions twice and the Rams twice. We had two game losing streaks all year. Rams and Lions week 5 and 6, or Lions and Rams week 5 and 6, Lions and Rams week 18 in the wild card round. I mean, it's like, it's mind boggling. But those Lions and Rams teams are built fairly similar. They can both get after the pass rush with four. They are very physical. They can play physical at corner. Neither one has superstars at corner, but both have great pass rushes. I mean, they were built almost identically as far as from the quarterback position to the linebacker position to the D-line to how they want to play defense to what weakness they picked at with the Vikings. I mean, they did it pretty much the same in back-to-back weeks on two different occasions, and the Vikings didn't adjust in either situation. So I don't know what that says about the Vikings coaching staff. I know they've had meetings with Kevin O'Connell, with the ownership. He says he's committed to the Vikings. Finally, they're committed to him. He would have been a coach that if he was made available, Kevin O'Connell, via trade or whatever, I think that multiple teams would either have fired their coaches or considered firing their coaches for the chance at him. Specifically the Bengals with Zach Taylor. I think Kevin O'Connell is a much higher, improved version of Zach Taylor. And if you saw what he did with Sam Darnold, imagine what he could do with Joe Burrow, Jamar Chase, and friends. But anyway, back to the Rams. The Rams handled up on the Vikings. And then, of course, the Ravens absolutely physically mauled the Pittsburgh Steelers. Before I move on from the wild card round, that was disrespectful. And in Jack's pack, I missed that game because I was like, man, ain't there's no way. I'm like, the Steelers plus 9.5, bro, there's no way. I was like, you gave more credit to Bo Nix. Oh, and the Bills, I'm sorry. The Bills manhandled up on the Broncos. Get Bo Nix up out of there. But you gave more credit to Bo Nix and the Broncos than you gave to Steelers and Mike Tomlin. And while the Steelers lost by on the scoreboard closer, one was 14, other one was like 22. So while on the scoreboard, they did lose closer than the Broncos lost. They were physically mauled in that game. That drive where they ran the ball 13 straight times for like 90 yards and a touchdown, and they only went up 14-0 in that moment. But again, no point where they more than 14 points down. They only went up 14-0 in that moment. And the game was over. Cam Hayward's on the sideline looking like, what just happened? The whole Steelers defense is like hunched over, like trying to catch their breath. And the Ravens just bouncing back to the sideline. M&T Bank Stadium's going crazy. And the game was over. Now, did Arthur Smith proceed to, who is the Steelers OC, proceed to bust out this brand new spanking offense, spread, and start scoring points in the second half? Yeah. But the Ravens were still running the ball. So 299 yards later, the Ravens win the playoff game against their hated division rival. I mean, again, a physical mauling is what occurred in Baltimore. Brutal if you're the Steelers. I mean, what a way to end your season, right? Not only did you not win a game the last five games you played, you also proceeded to you didn't win a game the last 5 weeks you played, and then you also proceeded to get physically mauled out of the playoffs by your division rival, who out-toughed you, which is the absolute worst thing that could happen in the NFC North, is to get AFC North is to get out physical, even in, especially in football in general. But some teams aren't built. Some divisions just aren't built for toughness. Like, some teams aren't quote unquote tough teams. The Steelers and the Ravens and the Browns and the Bengals, it's the AFC North, even though the Bengals move a pretty team, pride themselves on being physically tough, especially the Steelers and the Ravens and the Browns. And the Ravens mauled the Steelers. That can't happen in that building. That's a stuff's got to change in the building kind of loss, if you're the Pittsburgh Steelers. But that is something definitely to look out for going into this offseason for Pittsburgh, is to get tougher. It's to get more focused and to get tougher. Mike Tomlin won't, and we'll talk about him in a few minutes, won't stand for that. The Pittsburgh Steelers fans won't stand for that, getting mauled, especially by the Ravens. I mean, especially by the Ravens. That can't happen. But moving on to the divisional round. So we're going to attack each of these games in order that they will come on. The first two are the Saturday games. The next two are the Sunday games. We're out of the noon window for the rest of the year. There's no more noon football the rest of the season, or 1 o'clock football if you are in the East Coast. They can like 9 a.m. or something like that, like 10 a.m. football if you're in the West Coast. That was weird. I took a little bit off topic. I took a trip to Vegas. I took a trip to Vegas a couple years ago and went to a concert and woke up the next morning at like 10:30. By the time I go to sleep, it's like 3 in the morning. We ate pizza like 2 in the morning. It was wild, right? Get up at like 10:30 in the morning and like the game's on. And I'm like, huh? Because I'm used to being in Central Time. So I was like, there must be like a London game I forgot about. And no, it was like New York or something. It was on American soil and the game was being played. And I was like, what the world? Like, oh, yeah, it's like 1 o'clock. In the East Coast, like 12 o'clock at home. Oh, yeah, no, this is perfectly fine. Like, this is what's supposed to happen that they play. So that was really weird. But we're out of that window the rest of the season. These games start at 3:30 if your Central Time Zone, 4:30 if you are in the East. Then we're going to start with Texans and Chiefs. Now, we won't do or will do winners here. I don't know. I won't say we won't do winners because, of course, we're picking all the games in Jack's back. So, whatever. But this game is going to be incredibly interesting for a multitude of reasons. Now, this game happened, what was it, Christmas? Right around Christmas time, they played this game. It was Texans at Chiefs. It was like the exact same game. It's when the Chiefs actually locked up the one seed, I believe. But Texans at Chiefs, they played this game 4 weeks ago. And it was an absolute great ball game. It took one of those signature Chiefs. We find a way to win the game. We figured out a way to somehow survive it. And we put together a drive when we had to. And Patrick Mahomes and Travis Kelce was good for that one play when they had to. And the run didn't get blocked all night. And then it worked, that power worked when it had to. It was like one of those, they've been doing it all season. Where when everything they had to have, when they absolute had to have it, they got in this game. And they was able to survive the Texans. But it proved two things. Number one, it proved that Texans can hang with the Chiefs. That's something that hasn't been a proven fact since Deshaun Watson was up 24-0 in the second quarter of the playoff game. And then it also proved that, too, if I'm the Texans, that, man, we're a drive away. That arena isn't too scary for us. It's not the playoffs, but the arena isn't too scary for us. Patrick Mahomes, we can slow him down. Again, not the playoffs, but we can slow him down. It proves to us that our corners can contend because they pretty much ate them up with the tight ends. It wasn't, it, to me, I was watching a Christmas party, so I wasn't the most locked in. But from what I could tell, even looking back at the statistics, they didn't necessarily kill those guys with wide receivers. And I think that's huge. I think that if, and that, to me, this isn't the same Texans team either, because that Texans team you know, Stingley was being a man, but the other corner had his holes. But in that game, Mahomes is 28 of 41, 260 and one touchdown. Xavier Worthy has the one touchdown, and I believe that was on something really, really quick. Samaje Perine is next on the team in receiving yards. So it's like you have no one goes over 65 yards. Travis Kelce only has 30. I mean, they really held down the passing game. Stroud with two costly interceptions, and they really couldn't, and they only ran for like 100 yards, which was on the Texan side. So both defenses flexed their muscle. And I think it's going to be a really good ball game. I think actually this probably, no, it won't be the game. Well, all the games expect to be really good. I don't expect blowouts on anybody's side, like either way. NFL blowout to me is 10 or more. Double digits, NFL wins a blowout. I don't expect a blowout on either on anybody's side all week. So if you tease all the spreads up to plus 10, you'd hit them all, in my opinion, because it just doesn't feel, just looking at the teams, it just doesn't feel like anyone's going to get blown out here. But it's going to be a hell of a ball game. The Chiefs have not played in 26 days or something like that, between like a Patrick Mahomes and Travis Kelce. Now, if you are, of course, if you're a lineman or some safeties or corners or backers, outside of the best probably 6-7 players, you played 19 days ago. But for Mahomes and the crew, they hadn't played in almost a month. So it's going to be interesting to see if there's rust there. The Texans came off a dominating win against the Chargers. How are they feeling confidence-wise, technique-wise? What happens if Texans go up? I mean, it's Mahomes, but what happens if Texans go up 10-0, 14-0 in the first quarter? You know, what happens? This Chiefs team has not been a high-scoring team. All season, they have not been a big comeback team. Usually, the Chiefs teams that with a major comeback ability, they have hit 40, they've hit 38, they've hit 45 points consistently. They've hit 35 in the first half, and the game's over. You know, those kind of games where it's like, man, if we would have wanted to hit you for 60, we could have. The Chiefs team ain't built like that. They've been losing against the spread a lot of the season. So, a 14-0 lead, I will never say it's enough. Patrick Mahomes has earned the respect. Andy Reid's earned the respect to not just say, oh, that's enough for them. But that's going to be a heck of a mountain for this specific Chiefs team. Especially if the Texans don't gift them with turnovers and they play the game smart. It's going to be a heck of a mountain, again, for this specific Chiefs team to overcome. Our next game, our Saturday night football game, Commanders at Lions. A game of aggressive coaches. This is going to be a game where, again, a superstar was born last week, in my opinion, in Jane Daniels. Because last week he had the Sunday night game. Yeah, because the Rams and Vikings played Monday night. So he had the Sunday night game last week. He gets a Saturday night game this week at Detroit. So the one seeds both play on Saturday, Chiefs and Lions. And again, the Commanders are in the building if you're the Lions. Detroit has to be thinking this is the year. Like, just if you're a Detroit fan, you got to be thinking this is the year. This is where we finally pull it off. We get to the Super Bowl this year. I have the one seed, right? No one in our division is left. Vikings are gone. The toughest, the biggest, baddest division to ever exist. We're the last team standing. If you look at the other side of the NFC, the Rams, they're starting to get nicked again. And the Eagles really aren't the world's best passing attack. So kind of similar to how we attack the Vikings, we could probably get at the Eagles the same way. And a rookie's entering our building. So if you're the Lions, I know you do the whole one game at a time thing, but you're looking at a rookie quarterback after you've rested, a rookie quarterback, because they didn't get the traditional, like the Chiefs got week 18 and the wild card round. Well, they didn't play week 18 and the wild card round off. Then they played. The Lions had their important game week 18. So this is basically a traditional bye week for them. They don't have the weird double bye for certain players resting. Like, this is a traditional bye week for the Lions. So you're coming off a bye week, and then you go right into a rookie quarterback to get the rest, the rookie, and you didn't have one game between teams that you're, to be honest, better than, in my opinion,
to get to the Super Bowl.
If you're the Lions, you have to be thinking, this is our year. Gibbs and Montgomery are back. Now, you're beat to hell on defense, but Gibbs and Montgomery are there. Amon-Ra is currently unguardable. Jameson Williams is starting to run all over the place. Sam LaPorta is causing absolute havoc in the middle of the field. Flip it over to your defense. Your DBs are playing out of their minds right now. They are fourth, fifth DBs. I mean, one guy who just guarded Justin Jefferson like almost to a T was taken out of the rotation at corner early in the season for not being able to play corner. And now he is just one of the best corners in the league, apparently. You're playing with the utmost confidence. Dan Campbell has instilled a culture of physicality and toughness and relentlessness. And again, if you're Detroit, you gotta be thinking this is our shot. Super Bowl windows don't last nearly as long as the people in them or the people or the fans of the people in them believe that they are. I'm gonna be real, Detroit. They got about 2 years, and this is year one. This one there next year. After that, to me, the window closes. You got to pay Goff, Gibbs and Montgomery. He's going to get to repay it again. Amara's going to look to re-up. What's going to do with Aiden Hutchinson's contract? You got Penei Sewell again. So it starts to get financially difficult for this version of the team to win. You got this year and next year. Again, the window is not nearly as open. If you're Detroit, if I say, man, we just got in the window last year, I agree. Two bowl windows without ever winning one, to me, is about 3 years. Now, to me, when you win one, you kind of extend it another couple years. Almost as if, like, you know how to do it. And then usually teams who win one make a big run within the next couple of years. They make a run right back to the conference championship game. They get back to a Super Bowl. You know, so on and so forth. They get right back. Teams that lose them or don't ever get there, that window closes fast. And so if you're the Lions, you got to be thinking this is the window. If you're the Commanders, house, money, city. It is the definition of we really can't lose. With a rookie quarterback coming off, when we picked them second overall with our own draft pick. With a first year, the coach is the first time he's in the building. With a new host, with new staff, new quarterback, new owners, everything new except our stadium. We are sitting 60 minutes away from being in the NFC Championship game. Or we have the best season for rookie quarterback and coach combo winning-wise since Mark Sanchez, play-wise since RG3? Is Cam after RG3? Cam, maybe? RG3, because Burrow gets hurt early, Lamar gets booed off the field. Tim Tebow had the moment against Pittsburgh. I don't think that was rookie year. Might have been. I mean, it's just, yeah, probably the best rookie year of quarterbacking since RG3, ironically, for the same franchise. And, like, this, I mean Cam, RG3 and Cam, but Cam's before RG3. So, yeah, it's just, you're playing with house money right now. But the Commanders, to me, have to have the utmost confidence. I know they have the utmost confidence in Jane Daniels. I think they're getting it in their defense. While their defense is not amazing, I don't think it's great. I think it's opportunistically good. And I think if Dan Quinn can get you behind the sticks, he can dial up those packages and so on and so forth, I think that puts you in a bad spot if you're an offense. And I think that's what happened against Tampa Bay. They were able to get them behind the sticks a little bit in that second half, and they were able to just dial up the pressures and the coverages on Baker and confuse the routes and all the other stuff. And to me, again, you're playing with house money here. You can't lose. You can get blown out 40-10, and they're going to go, man, you had a rookie quarterback and the brand new staff, Commanders' future's bright, you know, so on and so forth. Like, to me, you can't lose. The Los Angeles Rams play at the Philadelphia Eagles, a game of two teams that no one believes in. Or no, to me, it feels like around the national media and even talking to people, you know, just around in general, no one really believes in the Rams and Eagles. No one's really beating the table for the Rams or the Eagles to win this game. And one of them will be in the NFC Championship game. Come Sunday night, one of them will be in the NFC Championship game because this is the first game on Sunday. If you're the Rams, To me, you're feeling all the belief. You're telling yourself, yo, we're the best team in the NFC. And if we weren't ravaged with injuries, we'd probably be the one seed. How true it is? I don't know. How true it is? It's a strong possibility. But it's on the table. The fact that they, you know, are the one seed and so on and so forth. If they win, or if they would have not been so beat up, there's a good chance they ended up the one seed in that situation. But that's what you're telling yourself. You're going around the building saying, we're the best team in the NFC. Healthy, we're, you know, something in two or something like that. We have our stars together. It has to be a mindset of we're the best team in the NFC. And if you're the Eagles, you're saying you're yourself, no, we're the best team in the NFC, and we're going to prove it. Now, the Los Angeles Rams have a talent issue in running the ball, but they're schematically schemed so well with Sean McVay. It's hard to really take advantage of the fact they don't have the world's best running players. They don't have the world's best personnel when it comes to running the ball. So it's a little hard to take advantage of some of their issues as far as personnel-wise, because schematically they're just done so well. However, the Philadelphia Eagles have an issue throwing the ball. And honestly, I think that has to be schematics, because they got A.J. Brown, Devontae Smith, and Jalen Hurts. They have two top 30 receivers and a top 10-ish QB. You should be able to throw the ball. And a pretty solid offensive line. You should be able to pass the ball better than they do, and they just don't. To me, that has to be schematic. That has to be play calling. It doesn't make sense, personnel-wise, why they struggle to pass the ball so much. And then the nightcap, the weekend cap, the game of the week. Ravens at Bills is the closest spread all week. It's a 50% chance of driving Buffalo signature snow. You've got a lot of narratives on the line in this game. You have the Lamar Jackson playoff narrative. Right now, he has three playoff wins. He may be collecting his third MVP very soon. That's a bad ratio. You have Derrick Henry, who's never played in games like this. He's played in the division around, sure. But it was with Tennessee, and it's like, yeah, I have to go for 300 to win us this game. That ain't the case no more. You have the Buffalo Bills on their side. You have Josh Allen, who can elevate and catapult himself right into the best quarterback alive conversation. And some people have him in it already. A lot of people have it as Mahomes is easily the best guy. More people expanded to Mahomes, Lamar, and Burrow. Josh Allen is either in that conversation with them four, or he's knocking on the door in a lot of people's minds. He gets to the conference championship game, he could be staring across the field from Mahomes. Winner's best QB alive on the line kind of thing. And that is something, because he beat Mahomes already this season. So that is something where he could easily be staring across the field from Patrick Mahomes going, winner's the best quarterback alive. And, you know, that's something that 7 years ago, the kid out of Wyoming was not supposed to be in the best QB alive conversation. But if it helps, neither was the kid from Texas Tech or the kid from Louisville. And so this is a game. It's going to be the best game of the year in the playoffs. To me, it's going to be the best playoff game. They're so evenly matched. They have number one and number two in the MVP race. Both have good running backs. Henry's better than James Cook, but I think Allen's a little better than Lamar. I think the Bills' receiving core, as underrated, as under-talented as it is, I think that as a core, they're better than the Ravens' core. Defense to defense, they're both going to be coming at you 1,000 miles an hour. So this is going to be a very interesting ball game. And the country is going to be locked into this game. We had a show last Sunday night with Commanders at Bucks. I think Ravens at Bills is going to be looking even better. All right, quick hitter time. So Sam Darnold, the big question in Minnesota is the Sam Darnold question. What now for Darnold? I think his time in Minnesota is over, but I don't think it's over for the sense of they want him out. I think it's over since stuff he's going to get bagged up by somebody, and they have J.J. McCarthy. I think if Minnesota didn't have J.J. McCarthy, they would be looking at keeping Sam Darnold for multiple years. But because you do have J.J. McCarthy, he was the ninth overall pick. He was the probable starter entering the season before he hurts his knee. Now, I think Sam Darnold would have started, but J.J. would have took over at some point. But now I think he's got a three-year, $100 million contract available to him, and I could see it in Vegas. I could see it in – I don't think it goes to San Francisco. That was why. People were like, oh, yeah, they're going to pay Darnold. For what? I believe he could get it in I believe he can get it in Vegas. I think whatever team ends up – you got some options there looking for quarterbacks, but whatever team ends up not getting their QB in the draft, because Tennessee's going to get Cam Ward, and the Giants are going to end with Shedeur Sanders. So if you're Vegas, you're going to miss again. Do you just say, screw it, we draft best player available, and we go get Sam Darnold? You know what I'm saying? So I think 3 years, 100, 110, between 50 and 70 million guaranteed is what Darnold's going to get in the open market, which considering how his career started, was he was most people weren't going to give him $60-70 million in current earnings. And he might get 70 million guaranteed over 3 years. So kudos to Sam Darnold for turning the year around. Or turning the career projection around. Aaron Rodgers' future, apparently, is linked to the new head coach and GM search. Packers, do me a favor. In 10 years, don't trade for Jordan Love. Like, this cause issue in Green Bay for some years, then became a little weird, then forced his way to New York, and then became a problem in New York. It's becoming a thing now, like, for quarterbacks in Green Bay. Let's not make this a third thing. Aaron Rodgers being weird. I think Aaron Rodgers wants an excuse to leave, and I think he wants that excuse to be someone else. I don't think he wants to be like, yo, guys, I'm tired of doing this, or I'm not as good as I used to be, I'm out. I really think he wants to blame someone else for his problems, and I think if they hire a GM he quote-unquote doesn't like, or a head coach he quote-unquote doesn't approve of, that's his excuse to leave and go home. If that's the case, Aaron, just leave, dude. It's all right. You're never going to be the best quarterback of all time. You're the best. Are you even the best? Okay, you're the best pack quarterback of all time, but you're never gonna be the best quarterback ever. You're never really gonna move up in the all time rankings because QB is a position of you are who you are unless you win more. Like for instance, Lamar really can't move much all time without more rings. Same thing with Mahomes. Like you could be a stat compiler. But if you don't win, you're kind of just a stat compiler. You're just more of who you are. So, but if I'm Aaron, dude, just, it's over, man. Like, go home. It's fine. Go do your ayahuasca, and maybe you're a permanent guy on Pat McAfee's show. I don't know. But go find something else to do. Mike McCarthy and the Dallas Cowboys could not agree on a long-term contract extension, reportedly over contract length. I think probably Mike McCarthy wanted some more security with years. Jerry Jones probably was not trying to do that. So, therefore, you get the divorce. Mike McCarthy is moving on. I think he lands either the Bears or the Steelers. Bears or the Saints job. They were the two most interested in him prior to the official breakup. And the next day, he interviews with the Bears. I mean, like, after his contract ends on Tuesday, he's in Hallis Place in Chicago interviewing for the Bears. Like, so... you know, and then the Saints, I think, are expected to either have interviewed or are expected to interview him very soon for their head coaching job. And I think Mike McCarthy will be able to pick his job. And then Mike Tomlin. And I went to Mike Tomlin decently-ish on the YouTube show. But Mike Tomlin is in a bad position. Mike Tomlin's in a position of, I'm too good. Sounds crazy. But it's true. He's never gonna coach a team bad enough to get Shedeur Sanders, to get Cam Ward, and kind of reset the team. He's too good for that. But he's never gonna be good. But because of this, he's never gonna get the draft picks, and his GMs for some reason can't land the free agents in order to give him a really competitive team to go in the Super Bowl. So he's gonna be forever stuck in 9-8, 10-7, out in the first round. Land because he's never going to be bad enough to get a high draft pick, and for some reason they can never field a team good enough to win a Super Bowl. I think, me personally, it's time for him to move on. I think he needs to figure out what organization he would like to go to, and him, the owner, the Rooneys, and, you know, the new team work out a trade. He goes to that team. Because it's just, again, Pittsburgh, you're stuck in perpetual purgatory. But I think he'd go to Jacksonville and revitalize that franchise. I think he'd go to Vegas and revitalize that franchise. I think he can go to the... I don't want him to see him in the Jets. I don't need that in my life and in the division. But, like, I think he can go to those franchises and truly revitalize their lives. And I think he can go to Dallas and he'd be great in Dallas. Like, I think it's time for him to move on, though. I do think it's time for him to move on from Pittsburgh. It's been a great run. He's never had a losing record, so on and so forth. But it's just, it's past time to move on. But after a long-winded A block, we're going to move on to our Jack's Pack. Welcome back into the show. And now we're going to jump into our very successful NFL betting segment, Jack's Pack. Although last week went 3-3. I thought the process was right. You know, I feel like we had good process there. Bounced back from that 1-4 end during week 18. But I said that was an outlier. I said that was weird because that week's always weird. Guys are sitting out. Guys are going for incentives. It's always a weird week, that last week. So, and we did that week kind of early. But again, I felt like the process was right in the wild card round. Gave a little too much credit to the Steelers there. And I was riding the same Donald Trance. I wasn't getting off. The Texas man handling the Chargers, I wasn't expecting that. Even Jim Harbaugh was like, yeah, we failed Justin Herbert on this one. That was unexpected. But again, I feel like the process is good in this week. 4 games to pick. In worst case, you want to go 2-2 here. I would love to go 3-1 or 4-0. But at worst case, we're going to go 2-2 here. Our first game of the week. We're going to pick them in order. Chiefs -8 versus the Texans. Take the Chiefs. Now, again, I spoke about this team not being necessarily a blowout team. However, I think that they win this game. And I went back and forth in this game. This is a game that if it was traditional Jack's Pack, I probably wouldn't pick. Because I think it's dancing on the line of perfect. I think if it was 7.5, I think it's tap dancing right on that line of perfect number. And I think this game, if this game was 6.5, 8.5, 9, I mean, if it was 8.5 or above, 9 even, I'd probably go Texans. Because originally on my paper, I wrote Texans, and then I flipped to the Chiefs. So I'm going to go Chiefs here, -8. I don't love the pick, admittedly, but if I picked the Texans, I wouldn't love that pick either. So, but Chiefs -8 versus the Texans. Commanders +9.5 at the Lions. Take the Commanders, my favorite number of the week. Take the Commanders here. I don't see the Commanders getting blown out. And for the Lions to win this bet, they got to win by 9.5, which is impossible. So they got to win by 10 or more, which is a blowout in the NFL. And I don't see the Commanders getting blown out. I think, again, I've been riding the Jane Daniels bandwagon all season. I'm not getting off now. I've been driving it all season. I'm not getting off now. And I just think that the aggressive styles of both coaches will ultimately impact the spread of this game. I think the Lions win the game. I just think that both coaches being fourth down guys, and both coaches being aggressive, and both coaches, you know, liking to play physical styles. Like, I just think that ultimately it will be both. I just think they'll both end up in the mid-20s. You know, and if as long as they're inside the same 20s, there's no way you can win by 9.5. So therefore, the Commanders will not get beat by 10 plus points, which means that the Commanders will cover this spread. third number of the week, our Sunday midday game, afternoon game, the Eagles minus 6.5 versus the Rams. Take the Eagles. I think this game is going to be a touchdown game. Like, this is, again, an almost perfect number. This game, if this spread was 7, I'd probably pick the Rams. 7.5, I definitely pick the Rams. But getting it at 6.5, which means Eagles are going to buy a touchdown. 27-20 is the number I keep hearing in my head. So I have Eagles here minus 6.5 against the Rams. Again, if this number is higher at all, I'm all over the Rams here. But 6.5, getting 6.5 to me is huge. So take the Eagles. And then Bills plus 1 versus the Ravens. This is a pick'em. This is a who's going to win the game. And I've got the Bills here. I think that talent-wise, the all-pros lie on the Ravens side. It's just the alien right now. Josh Allen's rolling. And that's not saying the Ravens are not. That's not saying Lamar and Derrick Henry are not. I just think Josh Allen right now is willing his teams to victory. And I think that's going to matter in the playoffs. Less in the NFL than in the NBA, where you say one man's going to physically drag a team to the playoffs, drag a team to where they want to be. And while I disagree with the premise that Josh Allen is the MVP, I disagree with the premise that it was a slam dunk for Lamar. I think that was a bit disrespectful to Josh Allen. He's the first player. I saw a statistic that he was the first player. He was the first player in like 15 years to be first team All Pro with no other All Pros on his team anywhere. So he's been a man amongst boys, for lack of a better term. I mean, I didn't really want to use that, but he's been a man amongst boys for the most part all season, and I think that will continue. I think they win this game over the Ravens. I think Derrick Henry's gonna have a good night. I just wonder with how the Ravens want to run the ball, is footing gonna be available? Because this is a game that's gonna be played probably in wintry conditions. And zone running schemes could be interesting if you're trying to slip and cut and all this other stuff. A zone running attack could be very interesting footing-wise for the Baltimore Ravens. But regardless, I have the Bills here. So just as a quick rundown, I've got Chiefs minus 8 over the Texans. Commanders plus 9.5 over the Lions. Commanders minus 6.5 over the Rams. Bills plus 1 over the Ravens. But up next, we're going to jump into a discussion about the College Football National Championship. Welcome back into the show. And now we're going to jump into the national championship game between Ohio State and Notre Dame. So going into this 12-team playoff era, many people honestly call this the potential SEC Invitational. Well, honestly, it would just be a whole bunch of SEC schools that would dominate all the way through, and they'd end up playing each other in the national championship game. Also, remember people said there's never been a fifth or a sixth or a seventh team worthy of being in the national championship game. Well, it's 7-seed Notre Dame and 8-seed Ohio State in the national championship game. Now, why this happened, I talked about a lot last week. The seeding was wrong. You got Boise State and Arizona State, who were not the second and third best team in the countries, getting the bye weeks as the second and third best team in the country, and that throws off everything else after that. These two teams probably should have been 3 and 4 in the rankings, or 2 and 3 in the rankings. So are they the seventh or eighth best teams? No. Are they the 7th and 8th seeds? Yes. Now, I think Ohio State, credit to Notre Dame. They've had a great season. They've had an easier path. And I think you're getting a lot of that talk now in the national media. Should Notre Dame be playing at a conference? Blah, 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 blah. Number one, they're getting a major financial advantage by not playing in a conference. Because all the money that you win by making it further and further into the playoffs. Well, they're getting $14 million checks that they don't have to split with anybody. Like Ohio State's only getting $1.1 million out of their check because the rest of it goes to the Big Ten. The SEC was getting about $1 million a team too, because again, the rest of it was going into the SEC. Notre Dame's not splitting with anybody. They're getting all $14 million. Which is huge for revenue sharing. It's just huge for the new revenue sharing model. It's huge for NIL. You could take, you want $14 million, put $7 into NIL. Now you got another $7 million for spent on players. Like, that's humongous advantage that Notre Dame is getting there. And outside of, they have a traditional, easier path. Plain and simple, they have an easier path in the sense of they don't play in a conference. They have a loose scheduling agreement with the ACC. Then they were able to draw, luck of the Irish type draw. They were able to get in the first round. They squared off at home. They drew Indiana, who was overmatched. Then in the second round, you get Georgia with their backup quarterback. Then in the third round, you get a Penn State team who doesn't complete passes to wide receivers, and you barely beat them. Ohio State, to me, is the best team in the country. And I said, all these teams are really good. And I kept saying good Ohio State's probably the best team in the country. Good healthy Georgia has a drop problem, but good Ohio State's probably the best team in the country. The problem was we never got good Ohio State consistently. You've got it consistently in the playoffs. They ran through Oregon. They ran through Tennessee. They ran through. It was a close game in the semifinal game. It was a close game, but ultimately they were just better. They were just better than Texas. And the score is a 14-point game, where Quinn Ewers is snapping the ball on the 5-yard line with a minute left, down 7. So it's not like they were absolutely mauled there. Texas, to me, I say good Texas is probably the second or third best team in the country. So the best team in the country and the second or third best team in the country went at each other. And it was Jack Sawyer with an 80-something yard fumble return to make it a 2-touchdown game. Otherwise, it's a 1-score game. It could even go in overtime. But Ohio State's an 8-point favorite. I think Ohio State covers that spread. I think they win this game by double digits. I'm just looking at Notre Dame. You played teams that were clearly overmatched. And your last team you played, like I said, literally could not complete a pass to a wide receiver. And you won by 3 by the skin of your teeth. And again, they literally could not complete a pass to a wide receiver. So considering that Ohio State has the best receiving core in the country, led by Jeremiah Smith and Emeka Abuka, I don't see this going well for the Notre Dame Irish. Great run, great season. Like what Marcus Freeman is doing over there, but they're not ready for this. And I think Ohio State wins, which is ironic because Ohio State hires Chip Kelly. And I said it before, as the coach in waiting, as the next coach up, as of if and when this goes left, you're the guy, and Chip Kelly's probably the reason why Ohio State's going to keep Ryan Day. So it's just crazy how that happens in sports. But I think Ohio State wins the national championship, and then Chip Kelly has a decision of if he's going to continue to go back to Ohio State or if he's going to throw his hat in the ring for one of these head coach jobs. But up next, we're going to shift to the NBA and talk about what's going down with the association. Welcome back into the show, And now we're going to talk about the NBA. I feel like we haven't talked about the NBA in a while on this show. It's been very football dominated, of course, with both playoffs going on, college and NFL. It's been very football centric. I feel like we haven't really talked about the NBA in a minute. So not going to do our full blown standings updates, so on and so forth. We'll save for that probably for after the All-Star break or definitely after the trade deadline. Definitely because trade deadline is February 6th, which is only a few weeks away. So after the trade deadline, we'll definitely be cranked up full-fledged in the NBA. That's post-Super Bowl, right around Super Bowl time. And the standing at that point, I think, will matter a little more. Because right now, like, if somebody's in seventh and then swings for a superstar, they're going to fly up the rankings really, really fast. But I do want to talk about a couple of teams. I do want to talk about Cleveland and Oklahoma City. I believe Cleveland is 6 games up in the East and Oklahoma City is 7 games up in the West. And the question many people are asking about these two teams is, can they win it all? Now, Oklahoma City is really, really young. Like, they're insane. Like, SGA is like an old man on that team. That dude's like in his early 20s. That team is really, really young. And really, really young teams typically don't win. The last really, really young team to even make it that far, to make it to the finals, ironically, was the Baby Thunder, which was the Kevin Durant, Russell Westbrook, James Harden Thunder that ran into the Miami Heat. And if they run into any other team, if they run into Boston, they probably win the title. And who knows how that changes legacies, because Russ has a ring, Harden has a ring, Kevin has a ring in Oklahoma City. Maybe they never break up, so on and so forth. Who knows, right? But the last really young team built of stars in their early 20s was the Baby Thunder of Durant, Westbrook, and Harden, and Ibaka. I think even Adams was on that team. I think it was all the youth. But I also think, at the same time, the Cleveland Cavaliers, who are a little bit older. Mitchell's a little bit older. Garland's a little older. Mobley's the young gun on that team. Allen, I think they're youthful as well. But the issue that I have with either of these teams winning the titles is the following. The NBA title is won historically at any point by some common, by at least one of these things being true. You have the unquestioned best player in the world. Like, by the time that finals end, it may not be the best player in the world going into that finals, but by the time that finals end, everybody could look and go, you got the best player on the planet. Period. Number two, you have two of the top 10. You may not have one, but you got two of the top 10. Or three, you have three of the top 20. That is the only way you win a title in NBA history. There is little to no outliers. First people think about, oh, what about Dallas in the 2011 finals? LeBron's the best player on the planet. Cool. By the end of that finals run, Dirk Nowitzki had beat the Baby Thunder. Remember that OKC team with Durant, Westbrook, and Harden that wins the title, that goes to the finals in 2011? Dirk beat him in 2010. Or they went to the finals in 2012, Dirk beat him in 2011. Kobe Bryant stopping him from his three-peat. And LeBron, Wade, and Bosh. For at least a month or two, Dirk was the best player on the planet. I mean, that's the only argument in the past 50 years, at least. Because, I'm talking since Russell Celtics. That's the only argument. And that was a weird time in the 80s. The 80s were weird. Late 70s, early 80s were weird. We were exchanging titles back and forth. It got odd. Especially since Magic and Bird entered in 79 and Magic wins in 80. It's you're either the best player, two of the top 10, or three of the top 20. Neither Cleveland or Oklahoma City can boast that. Neither have the clear-cut best player in basketball. Neither have two of the top 10 players in basketball. And neither have three of the top 20 players in basketball. It's a lot of Donovan Mitchell and guys. It's a lot of SGA and guys. These are good guys. Darius Garland and Mobley and Jared Allen are all really good players. Jalen Williams and Chet when he's healthy and the other Jalen Williams and Dort and that crew, they're all really good. They're all solid, good players. But I ask you this, And even if you backtrack it, and even if you say, hey, SGA is the best player on the planet right now, which is a hell of an argument, but there's no question he's a top 10 player on the planet right now. Is J-Dub a top 10 player? Nope. Let's go to Donovan Mitchell. Donovan Mitchell's a top 10 player in the NBA. Okay, can make that argument. No doubt about that. You make that argument. Who is Evan Mobley, Jared Allen, or Darius Garland the other top 10 player? No? Okay. That's fine. Okay. But SGA's one of the top 20. So is Mitch. So I can make an argument for J-Dub. No, you can't. You can't make an argument for J-Dub being a top 20 player. He may not be a top 20 player. You know, he's a top 20 player in the West. Is he a top 10 player in the West? Book and Durant are better. LeBron are better. AD is better. Shea's better. Wimby's better. Nobody on the Rockets is better than him. Steph's better. Harden's better. Kawhi, when healthy, is better. Zion, when healthy, is better. I mean, that's just quickly, and I only think I hit five or six. I only hit five or six franchises in the West. Ja's better. Go to the East. He's not better than Brown and Tatum. He's not better than Mitch. He's not better than Butler when he's locked in. I don't think he's better than Bam. He's not better than Brunson. I don't think he's better than Cat. He's not better than Anthony Edwards out West. I forget about him. Argue me with Ice Trey, although I go with Ice Trey. And that's just really quickly. I got to 17, 18 guys really fast. And I only hit about 13 franchises in the league. So, neither one. And think about it. I didn't name another person on either one of their teams. Neither one of them have the qualifications of the past 50 years to win a title. Definitely the last 40, 45. Again, the 70s are weird. So, definitely the last 40, 45 years, you got to either have the clear-cut best player on the planet, two of the top 10. So, like, it starts in 79, two of the top 10, Kareem and Magic. Or three of the top 20. Think about all those Celtics teams, Bird, McHale, and Parrish. Magic, Kareem, and Worthy. Then you get Isaiah Thomas, Lambeer, Joe Dumars, Rick Mahorn. That was more of the four of the top 30. Well, no, three. I think three of the top 20. And I think Isaiah Thomas at that point arguably had a case of best player on the planet. If he didn't, him and Dumars could play a case of top 10. If they didn't, him, Dumars, and Lambeer definitely had three of the top 20. Right? Then you get back into the Bird and McHale stuff. And then this guy named Michael Jordan starts winning in the 90s. He wins six, best player on the planet. Hakeem Olajuwon, when Michael Jordan retires, he's the best player on the planet. Guess what he does? Wins two. And then the Spurs win with three of the top 20. They have two of the top 10, Dave Robinson and Tim Duncan. And then Shaq and Kobe show up. They win as two of the top 10, which are arguably the best. Then you get the Pistons, get their weird one off. You know what I'm saying? So at no point is there this trend broken. I mean, you have a couple of argument years. Dirk's title. I forget who wins in 05. But then Dwayne Wade was the best player on the planet for about a month and a half. He wins it in 06. But him and Shaq were two of the top 10. Like, so I'm saying you get outlier, you get random years of argument with Dwayne Wade's title by itself with Shaq. But Shaq entering that year was, you know what I'm saying? So you have an argument with Shaq. They were two of the top 10 by the time it ended. Dirk's year in 11. I can't even think who won the 05 title. But, like, so you get years of argument. There's not even an argument for these teams. They can't win the title. They're going to have great years, but they can't win the title. Speaking of my Pelicans, I brought them up when I mentioned Zion and health. So it's pretty much been the argument my entire year is that my Pelicans are never healthy. But they're finally starting to get somewhat healthy. They won back-to-back games for the first time all season. Trey Murphy seems to be unlocked. He's handling the ball more. He's driving the lane. He looks to be a hell of a lot better than 3-and-D player. May have absolutely stole him financially with him and Herb and B.I. and Zion and Trey. I mean, I said Trey already and DeShante and CJ. Like, they have a lot of talent. I think if the Pelicans can win 4 out of the next 6, I think they have a decision to make at the deadline. Obviously, you can't. I don't think they're allowed to retrade for Valanciunas, so that move is out, right? But a legitimate, and Yves Messi is a fine player. He's a fine rookie center, but he's a rookie center. I think they have to make a choice on if they go get a running dunk center, just a guy who Daniel Tice is just those minutes where you can keep a footer on the floor. And they have to make a choice. If is it worth a couple of seconds to pick up a running dunk center? In a situation where you may even have to do a couple of seconds for a BI, sign and trade, and so on and so forth, like, where you may need those assets. If they creep up and they end up teetering right around, you know, 12th place, right around the deadline, what's your decision? Because right now they're dead last. Right now they're dead last, right? And they are 11 games back from 10th, right? They're 22 games under 500. But they're only 12, to me, they're 11 games back from 10th. Golden State's not going to really do much. San Antonio's not going to do much. Portland and Utah aren't trying to win games. 4 out of their next 6, they start being in shouting distance. And I'm not saying trade for Miles Turner. I'm not saying do that. But I am saying if there's a Jalen Duren, I think it's the kid's name in Detroit, which I don't know if they're going to be moving pieces right now. But because they're having a hell of a year. We'll talk about them in a couple of minutes. If there is an opportunity to get, like I said, a run-in dunk center for cheap, I think the Pelicans have to at least explore the opportunity. However, if they continue to be dead last by the deadline, I could see the Pelicans dumping a salary to stay under the luxury tax and get that $18 million check from the NBA. So this is kind of, with the next couple of weeks to me, is going to be a tell of where the organization is going to go. Quickly, I just want to shout out Ime Udoka. Second in the West, with his best player being Alperen Sengun. Although Jalen Green's playing like an all-star right now. Fred VanVleet and Jabari Smith Jr. and the Thompson twin. Think they have a sore? And then Ime Udoka's a hell of a coach. Like, second in the West, your best player, I believe, again, is Alperen Sengun, who I also think is better than J-Dub. And he's arguably the 22nd, 23rd, 24th best player in the NBA. And you're second in the West. So shout out to Ime Udoka. Their style doesn't work in the playoffs because they're a grind it out, beat you up, physical, we have no real body can get us 30 kind of team. It's not going to work in the playoffs where it's short in rotations and it's star-based. But shout out to them. The Detroit Pistons. Shout out to them, man. Huge shout out to the Pistons. They're 21-20 right now. They were 21-19. They were 2 games over for the first time since like 2019, which also the last time that they had an all-star, which was Blake Griffin. And I think Cade Cunningham is going to be an all-star for them this season. Currently averaging 24.4 points per game, 6.5 rebounds, 9.5 assists. I think he's going to end up being an all-star for them, which would be Detroit's all-star, again, for the first time since 2019, which was when Blake Griffin was traded from the Clippers to the Pistons and showed kind of the world. He had a couple years of good Blake Griffin left in him. And now there's rumors of a $5 billion international basketball league that could rival the NBA. Now, the NBA would never allow a rival. And it's not going to be played on American soil. It will be played all over the world. And it made news. It made news because Maverick Carter, longtime associate and friend of LeBron James, is reportedly leading the investment charge in this new league. Now, where their talent's going to come from, so on and so forth, who knows? Because if you're not in the NBA, pretty much you go to Europe or you go to China. So now, considering a traveling basketball league, it's like Harlem Globetrotter, but like with real talent and like 5-on-5. And I don't know, right? I don't know how that would work with travel and pay and so on and so forth. But even getting the talent. But yeah, you know, that could be an interesting option for guys to continue playing pro basketball and to see the world. Because, if, you know, we play in Singapore on Tuesday and then we went to Mumbai on Friday. And then we were in Toronto the following Wednesday. And then we went to like Utah the following Saturday. You know, so and, you know, and it could be. And then if I'm them, if I'm this league, I would avoid America and I would avoid Toronto. I'd go to like Vancouver if I'm gonna get there, or I'd go to a city that didn't have a team. So like, you know, maybe you play the game, maybe you play one of the games in Lafayette, for instance, because that's a couple hours away from New Orleans, not quite to Houston area. You know, like you play in like Lafayette, where they don't have pro teams, so they can see some of their favorite college stars who are in this league, so on and so forth. And it'd be interesting to see how they manage it. Of course, it's in its early development stages. They're in the investment stage, so this may never come to fruition, but it was interesting, and I definitely thought you guys would want to hear about it. But up next, we're going to have our best for last. It's going to be a discussion of the Unrivaled Basketball League that starts tonight. Welcome back into the show. And now we're going to talk about the Unrivaled Basketball League as the basketball world has officially gone unrivaled. The season starts tonight, which if you don't know what the Unrivaled Basketball League is, it is the 3v3 women's basketball league started by the players. Nafisa Collier, Breonna Stewart were two of the main driving forces. And the league was pretty dope. Most of the players, if not all of them, have at least a small percentage of equity in the league. They're all getting, I think, $100,000 to play in the league. There's going to be a $250,000 one-on-one tournament mid-season. And the season only lasts 2 months. It goes from January 17th to March 17th. So pretty cool there. But there are some key rules differences that I want to go over. I am definitely going to be tuning into this. Just looking at some of the teams, you know, some of the rosters, man, are crazy. And then I'm going to talk about what Angel Reese spoke about the league shortly. But they will begin play in Miami, Florida on January 17th. The court will be smaller. It will keep the same width as a traditional WNBA court. But however, it will be 24 feet shorter. They are playing 3-on-3 full court. So juxtaposed to the Olympic style 3-on-3 where it's half court, they are playing 3-on-3 full court. Each game will consist of 3 7-minute quarters with a fourth winning score. So think of the Elam ending is what it's properly called. Remember the All-Star game? Or if you guys are really basketball junkies and you watch TBT, which is the basketball tournament, they have the Elam ending, which is so every game ends on a game winner. And then the All-Star game adopted it the year that Kobe passed. The target score was 24. And what it does is the winning score fourth quarter. So what happens is there is no overtime. It keeps overtime games away. And it also keeps the game exciting. So if it's a 53-38 game entering the fourth, well, you're just adding 11 points, and that's your winning score. So if it's 50-38, the winning score is 61. First one of 61 wins. The shot clock is set to 18 seconds. And also, the clock only stops in the final 30 seconds of a period. So I think that's our 7-minute running clock. So if it's a free throw, is the clock running still? Probably not. And then there is also, so if it goes out of bounds or whatever, the clock's not stopping. So it's final 30 seconds. Interesting. And then there's a one shot for whatever it is value. So if you're fouled on a 2, got one shot for 2 points. If you're fouled on a 3, one shot for 3 points. And if it's an and-one situation, of course, it stays the same. One shot for 1 point. In this league, however, players get 6 fouls. But if there's only 3 players left on the team, then the player can continue to play. They just become technical fouls at that point. So it's shot plus the ball. They just become technical fouls at that point. And it's 6 teams, 36 players, I believe, is what I can remember. Or 12 teams, 10 teams, 36, whatever. But it's not like jammed to the max. It's not like each team only has 3 players. So that'd be interesting there. But Angel Reese spoke about the unrivaled league, and she said they get to work out. Her tweet exactly is, they get to work out, create new bonds and friendships, get treatment, get massages, use the sauna. They're getting 2 meals a day from the league, and she even got a facial before she left. And she was talking about how much she loves it there. So I'm very interested to see, excited. They get started tonight at 7 on TNT. So I will be tuning into that because I do want to see it happen. I want to see the teammates. And this is interesting. This happens before WNBA free agency. So I think if this league is viable, their contracts, their TV ratings are up like they've been showing, and their contracts are high, and they keep their contracts up, this may limit the amount of players going overseas, especially top talent. Keeps our top talent in America. It may keep our top talent maybe doing media in America. And also, again, just a fun experience, and it could change free agency. So, for instance, the Valkyrie going to have a ton of money in free agency because every player they picked from rosters were not that great financially. So it's going to be very interesting to see what players may end up playing the Unrivaled League and then team up in the regular season. Or play together, play against each other in Unrivaled League, build a bond, and then the story comes out, oh, they grew a great friendship, you know, in the Unrivaled League. And you see them making TikToks and all that stuff together. Like, this could be very interesting dynamic change for the W. But that is all I have for the day. Thank you guys for rocking with me for a little over an hour. I created a really long A block, but we put all the NFL into one block. We brought the NBA back, touched on Unrivaled. I think it's a well-rounded show. Hope you guys have a great rest of your weekend. Stay safe out there in this weather. I know, like, for me personally in the South, we could have a winter blast coming in. Not something we're used to. Stay safe out there. Prayers to California for the wildfires. What's going down there? Hopefully get that under control soon. People can start rebuilding their lives. But that is all I have for today. This is your host, Justin Jackson, signing out.